you can be called an environmental artist, and I want you to kind of define for us what that is.
I mean, I think to say it for me, okay, to be an environmental artist means that my art is rather than just being about making something pretty and about trying to sell something, my focus is about environment and about bringing attention to the regeneration of environment and environmental issues. So I decided that I wanted to do something that was going to help nature.
And what was the first step you took in doing that?
As a younger person, I'd always dreamt of being a marine biologist, actually. And I had got caught up in my career in London, and I was living in East London in a warehouse, and I was living this kind of very funky urban life. But yet, you know, that kind of cliche feeling, I felt kind of a bit of emptiness inside. And so I thought, okay, I need to bring myself back on track here. And so I started to kind of go out on dolphin watching trips and took my holidays at the sea. And then I decided to follow through on a dream, which was to do my scuba diving. And then actually on the way to doing this trip, I was involved in an air incident where a madman tried to take the plane down. And so it was kind of a bit of a cliche that I was about to kind of fulfill a dream. And then I found myself having a very near-death experience. So,
what did he do?
It was pre-9/11, so they still had an open door policy. We were flying British Airways from Gatwick to Nairobi, and it was just after Christmas. He'd come in from France. He was a French student. He was suffering from a kind of temporary schizophrenia, and he went into the cockpit and tried to take the plane down. Because it was the middle of the night, there was only one pilot in the cockpit at the time. So basically, when he tried to take the plane down, there was nobody else to help. You know? So yeah, he basically, there was a kind of whole incident unfold. The plane started to fall out of the sky. It stalled. I mean, it was on the internet. I mean, famous people on the flight, so it actually became quite major media, you know. And it was because some other people from the first class actually realized something was happening and kind of went in and tried to pull this man off. But then as he tried to pull, he didn't let go of the steering wheel. So then the plane started to go up. I mean, it was mad. Yeah. So it did change my life quite a lot. Yeah.
like you land and you're, I'm sure just like everything is happening in your mind so fast. Like, did you have like this, like, I need to do something now, I need to like refocus, like, then is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I mean, we just were all in shock to begin with, actually, and it took a while for the whole feeling to integrate itself. I think initially, actually, I was kind of upset that I still felt kind of saddened by things in my life. Do you know what I mean? And that I didn't have this kind of this kind of moment of illumination in that moment. But it certainly began the process of me making some fairly major changes, definitely.
So you find yourself in Indonesia and you have this love for the ocean and marine life, and you also have this artistic skill set. Do you remember what the point was when those kind of converged?
Well, I mean, it converged really when I started to do my first shipwreck dives. So one of the things that people love to do when they're diving is you go, people will say, you go to these locations around the world and they tell you the dives that you can do there. And often there's a shipwreck. And by this point, I'm starting to kind of get an idea of it. But yeah, so you dive a shipwreck and suddenly these boats are just kind of covered in marine life. And particularly what really stimulated me was an organization called Greenpeace, who I had been following for many years. And I discovered that one of their boats, the Rainbow Warrior, had been campaigning out in the Pacific Ocean against nuclear testing. And at the time, the French actually attacked the boat to stop them from doing their campaigning, killing a photographer on board. Anyway, the boat was damaged so badly that it was something called decommissioned. When they decommission a boat, they strip it of all the electrical staff, all the oil, so that there's nothing toxic about it. And they actually deliberately sink it. So this is now an unbelievable reef in New Zealand in Matawi Bay. And I just was like, oh my God, I just love this idea that this boat that had been campaigning for the oceans was now under the water giving life to the sea. So this is how it was really, these kind of ideas of a man-made object was able to become a kind of sanctuary for marine life.
So tell me about the first time you created a piece to kind of rehabilitate a part of the ocean.
Well, I mean, it took a long you know, there was a long process of me trying to get things going. But ultimately, I mean, what eventually happened is I had left Indonesia. Then I'd gone to live in Cornwall in the West Country of England. I'd been traveling over, researching all over the world. But what seeded the first project was Indonesia again. I had gone back to Indonesia to do some more work out there and had discovered this technique by an American scientist actually called BioRock. He's a scientist called Tom Goro. And he had done a few projects in Indonesia where he uses a kind of very interesting technique where they actually use an electrical charge to stimulate coral growth and survival rates. And I had seen some of his projects and had kind of made contact with him. And he runs these workshops in Indonesia. So he said, why don't you attend one? So I decided to attend. I kind of arrived a few days early and met up with the organizer, a girl called Delphine. And she basically said to me, if you can persuade the sponsors on the island to do a sculpture instead of just your normal structures, they would just do very kind of, you know, practical structures. She said, you can go for it. So I went and spoke to some of the sponsors and they said, yeah, go for it. So during this workshop, we created a few. One of them was a manta ray, which was we'd created a sculpture in the shape of a manta ray and a turtle.
So, and it's interesting to me too that we talk about like the shape of it, right? So you make a manta ray, you make a turtle, and they're using these like utilitarian shapes. But at the end of the day, they're still kind of like both really just like functional like pieces,
yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what, for me, I think we were touching on earlier, you know, what made this environmental art. And I think this is for me, what makes it environmental art is that it's not just an aesthetic piece, you know, it has a kind of functionality to it, you know. I mean, ultimately they'll all get completely covered over and you won't be able to see what they look like anyway, you know. So I kind of love that as well.
So how many of these underwater pieces did you end up doing?
I mean, in this particular location, we ended up doing, I don't know, gosh, about 20 of them. But I mean, it's part of a much bigger project, you know. So the sculptural ones are part of, I mean, maybe we did about 20, but they're part of like 200 other structures, you know. I did a really stunning piece in the northwest of Bali called The Coral Goddess. It was already part of a bigger project again where they'd already done maybe 30. I then came along and said, why aren't we doing sculpture? So since then, the local artists have created phenomenal sculptures in that location. So the way that I tend to work is I tend to kind of find a suitable location, kind of and bring the kind of creativity to them. And then from then, they often then kind of take it over and continue. So me personally, I've done about 30, but, you know, what we've seeded, I don't really know, you know.
So you lived in Indonesia and you lived in England, places where the ocean is very readily accessible.
Yeah.
But now you've moved here. You live in Aspen now.
Yes.
It goes without saying that we are very far from the ocean.
Yes.
So how do you continue to do this?
Well, I mean, there's no question that it's challenging and that I do miss the sea a lot. And but I think for me, what's interesting is that I was always very interested in how to communicate issues to people that weren't necessarily related to it, kind of in very close proximity. So in that sense, it's interesting for me personally to kind of be so far away from the sea and see whether anybody cares anything about it here or that aspect of it. So I find that personally quite interesting.
How do you adapt kind of what you do in the ocean and worldwide to Aspen, a place that kind of fits your criteria? I know there's the tourism potential, but also there are lots of environmental issues to contend
with. What we're looking at is actually doing art that can actually have a positive impact. So I think that's one thing that I find very interesting. I mean, I've been doing some research on it and, you know, there's a fantastic project in San Francisco, you know, where they had an artist that created this amazing kind of pyramid from the wood that was gathered during a, you know, forest management program. And then the structure was there to provide habitat for foxes. Or there was another wonderful piece where a very famous Chinese artist, Ai Weiwei, created these beautiful ceramics that hang in trees, and these create habitat for owls. So, you know, this is what I'm starting to see, that here we are in Aspen. As you say, there are some issues here. And so we could explore this, we could kind of create ecovention art here.
Where do you see potential for something like that here? Like, do you have anything in progress or in the works?
I mean, it's a very complicated process to get these things. There's so many different factors, you know. And one of the great things about working in Indonesia is we didn't have so many logistical factors. But yeah, we have been talking to ACES. I know that ACES are interested in doing an environmental art program. I think it's difficult for them to kind of put it into their program. But, you know, ACES would be a very good organization to work with. We've been talking to ArtBase as well. Yeah, I mean, there's no question that it's been proven around the world that you can get huge. For someone like ACES, it would be very good for them because, you know, it's proven that a good art installation can attract huge numbers of people. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Great. Thank you.